Buccaneers, your daily Tampa Bay Buccaneers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, Bucs Nation? Welcome to today's episode of the Locked On Bucs podcast. I am your host, David Harrison. It's Crossover Thursday, so James Yarko is off for today's episode. Find him on Twitter at @JYarko_Bucs. Find me at DHarrison82. Find the show at Locked On Bucs. Find everything that he and I are writing about your Tampa Bay Buccaneers over at BucsNation.com. On Twitter at @Bucs_Nation. If you didn't hear from him and Evan Klosky of WTSP 10 Tampa Bay, please check out yesterday's episode if you're done with this episode to hear everything that they talked about. Of course, that episode, just like this one, free and available on all platforms. Guys, the Locked On NFL Draft podcast relaunches September 20th with brand new hosts. Eric Crocker brings the player scouting. Ryan Tracy brings the analytics. Follow the Locked On NFL Draft podcast on YouTube, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get podcasts. On today's episode, we're going to talk about injury updates. We're going to talk about news, Locked On NFL power rankings, and then it's Crossover Thursday, so I'm going to be joined by Aaron Freeman of the Locked On Falcons podcast. First and foremost, guys, let's get into injury reports, updates, and news. On Wednesday, Shaquille Barrett, Antonio Brown, Jason Pierre-Paul, and Jordan Whitehead all listed on the injury report. Shaq Barrett had a back injury. Antonio Brown listed with a knee injury, but both were full participants, so right now nothing to really worry about. Jason Pierre-Paul listed with a hand injury as a limited participant. Of course, we're no strangers to Jason Pierre-Paul being on the injury report. Nothing to worry about until there's something to worry about. The big news of the day, though, Jordan Whitehead, safety with that hamstring injury, full participant on Wednesday. Bruce Arians said he was a full go. Looks like he will be playing Sunday against the Atlanta Falcons. Speaking of the Atlanta Falcons, in our Locked On NFL power rankings, the Atlanta Falcons fell from 25th to 29th place following their loss to the Philadelphia Eagles in week one. Your Tampa Bay Buccaneers, following their win over the Dallas Cowboys, remained number one in those power rankings for the second straight week, while the New Orleans Saints rose from 17 to 12 after their impressive victory over the Green Bay Packers. The Carolina Panthers climbed from 26 to 23 after beating the New York Jets. Interestingly enough, in this week's power rankings, guys, the Miami Dolphins and the Indianapolis Colts both won their matchups, yet fell in the rankings. So maybe a little bit of disrespect given towards the way they won or the opponents that they defeated. Either way, both those teams winning in week one, coming into week two 1-0, but coming in lower in our Locked On NFL power rankings than they were last week. So interesting stuff there. The Cleveland Browns and Dallas Cowboys both lost their games, obviously the Cowboys to the Buccaneers, and then the Cleveland Browns in heartbreaking fashion to the Kansas City Chiefs lost their game. They both still rose up the power rankings anyway. The Texans, Falcons, Jets, Lions, and Jaguars round out your bottom five, while the Bucs and Chiefs remain 1-2 for the second week in a row. Rams, Seahawks, and Bills round out your top five. Now, there's been some questions and some buzz on social media because the Buffalo Bills are still in the top five, while the Pittsburgh Steelers rose to number 8 from 12 in week one after defeating the Buffalo Bills. So a lot of people wondering, how can you have the Steelers below the Bills if the Steelers defeated the Bills? And I guess the only thing I can really say to that, guys, if you have those same questions, the Bills started off at number 3. The Steelers started off at number 12. So yeah, you know, 12 beat 3, so they're both going to, you know, one's going to rise, one's going to fall. But I mean, the Bills dropped from 3 to 5. The Steelers rise from 12 to 8. A little bit of a head start there for the Buffalo Bills, I suppose, is how you explain that one. But still, you know, the Bills, again, rounding out the top five there. And that is the Locked On NFL Power Rankings for week two. Again, we're doing this every week, so it'll be up again in week three following the week two action. And speaking of the week two action, it's Crossover Thursday. So Aaron Freeman of Locked On Falcons podcast is going to jump on here. He and I are going to talk Bucs Falcons for week two, and we're going to do so thanks to our friends over at rockauto.com. Why would you want to spend 30, 50, even 100% more for auto parts at a chain store or at a car dealership than what you would get it for at rockauto.com? Our friends who are family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, even new carpet. Whether it's your classic or your daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. And best of all, the prices at rockauto.com always reliably low, and they're the same whether you're a professional or a do-it-yourselfer. Again, why spend extra money when you don't have to? Go to rockauto.com right now, see all the parts available for your car or truck. Right, Locked On in there, how did you hear about us box? Well, you know, we sent you amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. kicking off Crossover Thursday here at the Locked On Bucks and Locked On Falcons podcast. I am David Harrison, one of the hosts of the Locked On Bucks podcast on Twitter at dharrison82. You can also find me writing about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for bucksnation.com at bucks_nation on Twitter. Aaron Freeman, host of the Locked On Falcons podcast and writer occasionally for the Falcoholic, also a part of SB Nation. Find him on Twitter at FalcFans. Aaron, always happy to talk to you, man. Usually, I would like it to be under more competitive circumstance, but we're kind of talking a little bit off air before we start recording. This game, not expected to be all that competitive, but I mean, still, man, anytime I get to catch up with you is great. So outside of the Atlanta Falcons troubles, man, I hope everything's going good on your end of the line.
Yeah, man, I'm looking forward to this upcoming game. And you know, divisional games tend to be a lot closer than at least Las Vegas seems to think it is. So, you know, I don't necessarily have high hopes for the Falcons to prevail in this game. I certainly think we have a potential for a much closer matchup than necessarily the spread indicates. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, man, the spread is always a tricky part when you're talking about NFC South competition. Doesn't matter where the two teams are in the grand scheme of football. It's a division matchup. It's usually going to be a tough matchup. Obviously, things didn't go the way the Atlanta Falcons wanted to in their week one loss to the Philadelphia Eagles. But their first two drives of the game ended inside the Eagles' 10-yard line. I've got kind of my own thoughts on why things went awry there. But bottom line is Matt Ryan couldn't navigate his offense past the 50-yard line for the rest of that game. What broke down in your eyes between those first two drives and then the final nine of the game?
Yeah, I think with the Falcons, most of their issues offensively stemmed from the mismatch that they had in the trenches between their offensive line and the Eagles defensive line. This was something I talked about on Locked On Falcons when I went through the film, and you saw on those opening drives when, you know, between the 20s, the Falcons were able to utilize sort of their, you know, bigger personnel groupings, 12, 21 and 22 personnel, I think, to sort of get a advantage in terms of numbers of the Eagles playing with that cover two scheme with, you know, sort of a seven man box and sort of getting a hat on the hat. And that led to the Falcons being able to move the ball down the field in the run game. But then once they got into the red zone, you know, you get that sort of condensed field and you're not necessarily getting a numbers advantage, and the Falcons offensive line needs to be able to make their blocks. They weren't able to do that. So they weren't able to run the ball into the end zone. And then, you know, there were some questionable decisions in terms of the passing game. Maybe Matt Ryan could have, you know, made a throw here or there. It was certainly that initial third down on their opening drive where everybody was sitting there scratching their head. Why isn't Kyle Pitts on the field? You just drafted this guy for number four overall. So red zone struggles aren't new to the Falcons. That's been an issue that they've been dealing with for the last couple of seasons. One of the things that we expected from head coach Arthur Smith with his hiring, given that the Tennessee Titans over the last 2 years that he was the play caller there were the best red zone efficient team in the NFL. We thought that would translate immediately here in Atlanta. It seems like that's going to continue to be a work in progress, and we'll see if the Falcons, you know, can do better getting another crack at it this week against Tampa Bay.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that first drive alone, man, I mean, Calvin Ridley falls down on what looks like it's going to be a touchdown pass. I mean, who knows? You know, we know that the way momentum works, when you put a touchdown on the Philadelphia Eagles on that first drive, the way that they were moving down the field and that pressure alone on that Eagles squad, that could be enough, honestly, to turn the tide of this entire game. That's how fickle football can be. But if there's good news coming out of this game, it's no turnovers for the Falcons in week one. The defense didn't have any takeaways either. There were some fumble opportunities. The ball didn't change hands at all. But the defense also gave up 32 points. So a couple of positive with a negative, unfortunately. When I look at it this way, there's when we talk about complimentary football, basically there was none, right? The Falcons offense didn't have a single drive go longer than 2 minutes and 33 seconds from midway through the second quarter on, and they didn't have a first down from beyond the 9 minute mark in the second quarter until they were in the fourth quarter. So how much of that 32 point production, how much of the 264 yards passing and three touchdowns, again, with no interceptions from Jalen Hurts, is really on the defense, and how much of it is a byproduct of the lack of complementary football in the offense that just couldn't stay on the field?
Yeah, I think Some of it obviously is on the defense. There were certainly plays to be made, certainly stops that they could have gotten on some of those drives that the Eagles wound up scoring on. And so certainly I won't necessarily praise the defense too highly, given that they gave up 32 points and it was 32 points relatively well earned. But I do think, as you sort of seem to be intimating, that the defense certainly got enough stops, particularly in the second half of the game, to get the offense back on the field. And I know two of those second half scores for the Eagles came on short fields where the Falcons weren't necessarily winning the field position battle. There was a punt where they were sort of backed up in their sort of, you know, first year punter, Cam Nizelec, you know, really needed to boom a 50 yard punt. And he wound up punting the ball 31 yards. And that, I think that started the Eagles at the 50. And so essentially, you know, a couple of plays here or there, and they were in scoring position when they wound up ultimately scoring on that drive. And so I think with the, you know, defense's performance, you know, a lot of it was due to the fact that they weren't getting reliable pressure on Jalen Hurts. There were several times where they were able to blitz him. But, you know, Hurts used his mobility and his athleticism to escape those blitzes. And that really sort of hurt the Falcons defense in those situations where they could have gotten stops to sort of, you know, get the ball back into the hands of the offense. And they were not able to do that. And the Eagles relied heavily on their sort of quick, short passing game. And that's one of the reasons why Hurts was so efficient in week one. And so I think the Falcons are going to have to sort of tighten things up there and maybe be a little bit more aggressive against this Bucs team. Obviously, you know, Dean Pease is not going to be able to throw anything at Tom Brady that Tom Brady hasn't seen over the last 20 years of playing in the NFL. But at this point in time, what do you have to lose is sort of my mindset. Might as well throw the whole kitchen sink at him, and maybe you can get Tom Brady, you know, tricked one or two times. Maybe that leads to a turnover or two, and maybe that winds up being the difference between, you know, potentially winning and losing a football game.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the way that the Eagles attack that Falcons defense, if the Falcons don't make an adjustment, I think Antonio Brown might set a fantasy record just in points from receptions in this game, just eating up that short area of the field. Absolutely right on that one. So sticking with the offense a little bit, Calvin Ridley, Kyle Pitts, we kind of already mentioned their names a little bit here already, but they were the talk of the offseason outside of Atlanta anyway, from the Locked On Bucs perspective, because we were questioning whether or not Ridley was ready to truly be a number one wide receiver. Was Kyle Pitts worth such a high draft pick investment, especially with Hayden Hurst on the roster? After 1 week, right, obviously this project, this experiment, whatever you want to call it, is not a final grade, but after 1 week, what are you making of it so far?
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where obviously we can sit here and say maybe we should have had lowered our expectations, given it was the first week. We didn't really get to see much of the start, or really any of the starting offense in the preseason, and this is going to be a work in progress rather than sort of a situation where, you know, everything was going to come together immediately for this team. And so, you know, that's my bad. That's on us in terms of looking at that situation. But I do think we can expect, you know, we should expect more from this group, given the talent level. We've seen Calvin Ridley have some very big games against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Russell Gage, who was held catchless, their number two wide receiver in the absence of Julio Jones now, you know, was held catchless against Philadelphia. But, you know, you look at his seven best games where he's had 65 or more yards receiving, four of those have come against Tampa Bay. So he seems to thrive against Sean Murphy bunting in particular. I know he's dealing with some injuries, so that matchup may not be featured this Sunday. But this is an opportunity for, I think, this young receiver core that the Falcons have, given the talent that they have, to, you know, go up against a secondary that they're familiar with, a secondary that they've had success with. And then obviously with Kyle Pitts, you know, we expected more. We continue to expect more from him. And this, you know, we know that historically speaking, rookie tight ends don't necessarily hit the ground running in the NFL, but Kyle Pitts is a unicorn for a reason. And so we expect him to be the exception to that rule. And sort of, if the Falcons can get him going early in this game, that certainly will be benefit and allow them to really sort of spread the ball around. And that may make their offense particularly potent against this Bucs defense.
Yeah, I mean, they'll be playing up against a guy, Devin White, who knows all about being called a player who is overdrafted because of his position. Everybody criticized the Bucs when they drafted an off-ball linebacker, and it's turned out pretty well for them over, you know, the first 2 years and into this third one. So Kyle Pitts, so it's time, obviously, but, you know, I know a lot of fans were hoping to see better in week one. Final question for you, Aaron. Bucks fans are pretty smart, you know, from where I sit and all the social media interaction I have from them. They know the Atlanta Falcons pretty well, but who is a Falcon they may not know, even just know as well, that can impact this game on Sunday?
Well, you know, probably the player of the game on Sunday was Cordarrelle Patterson, which was a little bit of a surprise given that he was signed essentially to be a kick returner, but he's also in the mix as, you know, a backup running back behind Mike Davis. And we got to see Cordarrelle Patterson run pretty efficiently behind those Falcons offensive lines, particularly in those early drives, the second one in particular. And in addition to that, you know, his value as a kick returner, he only got one opportunity on Sunday, took a deep kick out from 9 yards deep and wasn't able to necessarily get it past the 20. But anybody who's watched Cordarrelle Patterson over the last 7 or 8 years knows that he is a playmaking threat, a game breaker as far as the return skills go. So I think if there is going to be a potential X factor, not only with Patterson's ability out of the backfield, being able to split out wide and use that wide receiver skill set that he came into the league with before making the conversion to running back in the last couple of years, and then you couple that with the potential to, you know, really enhance the Falcons' special teams and field position battle with maybe a big kick return, I think Cordarrelle Patterson could be the X factor to keep an eye on in this Sunday matchup.
Yeah, absolutely. I was surprised to see as much usage out of him in week one, but I thought he made some really good work with the touches he had. Aaron Freeman, host of Locked On Falcons podcast, writer occasionally, again, for the Falcoholic, part of SB Nation. Great stuff as always, brother. I'm David Harrison, host of the Locked On Bucks podcast, one of the hosts there, writer at Bucks Nation, also a part of SB Nation. After this break, guys, we're going to flip it around, and Aaron is going to ask me about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, a team that he knows very well. You guys probably know very well, even Falcons fans, because a lot of returning players, right? So we'll be right back with the second part of this Crossover Thursday episode.
Before we flip sides of the ball, I want to let you guys know that BetOnline is back, and it's better than ever. All eyes are now on the gridiron. Teams are back to start another football season. And as always, BetOnline is your number one spot for pro and college football action this season, with a new updated website and interface and even more odds, props, and contests. BetOnline.ag continues to be that number one source for everything football. Head over to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today with the promo code LOCKEDON for a 50% welcome bonus. You can take on tonight's matchup between the Giants and Washington, where Washington is favored by 3 points. Atlanta and Tampa Bay, the matchup that we're talking about on today's Crossover, you have the Bucks favored big in this game by 12.5 points, but maybe those sneaky Atlanta Falcons can cover in this game. And BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports, from football, basketball, boxing, right to your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. So we're continuing today's Crossover Thursday between myself, Aaron Freeman, host of Locked On Falcons, and David Harrison, one of the hosts of Locked On Bucks. And David, looking at this Bucks team, obviously the defending Super Bowl champions, you and I talked about this team back in July on the Locked On Falcons podcast to preview this team. And that conversation centered around, you know, what if, you know, anything can you nitpick with this Bucks team? I'm curious to get your thoughts on that week one action. I know a lot of people went into that game expecting the Bucks to win big against the Cowboys. Obviously, we know that the Las Vegas expects the Bucks to win big this week against the Atlanta Falcons. But I'm curious to get your perspective on that week one matchup. Did Dallas expose some things that caused you a little bit of concern moving forward with this team? Or is it sort of, you know, smooth sailing here? You know, this is the NFL, you know, games are going to be a lot closer than people realize. Where is your sort of takeaway from that week one game?
Yeah, I mean, so coming into the season, you know, the conversation we had a lot is that the secondary was kind of the most worrisome part of this unit, and a strong team kind of all, you know, up and down the roster. But if there was a concern, there was a weak spot, it was a secondary, mainly just because of youth. And, you know, they've got some great experience. Winning Super Bowl, obviously, is great experience for any young player. But they were still very young players. And Jamel Dean specifically, we talked about a very aggressive cornerback, which is what makes him so exciting sometimes. It helped get him pick six against Aaron Rodgers in the regular season last year, and that was a great play for this Buccaneers defense. But it also has, you know, the negative side, which he bites on double moves a lot. He kind of overplays his hand a little bit when he thinks he has a read on what's going on in the offense, and it kind of gets him out of position from time to time. And we saw that against the Dallas Cowboys. And that's something that we know Todd Bowles and the, you know, the defensive coaches there in Tampa have talked to him about. He knows about it. He's been studying, preparing, and he's going to try to do his best. But I mean, at the end of the day, you know, we see it with a lot of players. You see it with Jameis Winston's of the world. You see it with the Brett Favre's of the world. You know what I mean? Players that are gamblers at heart, and they kind of play into that notion a little bit. So with Sean Murphy bunting out, Jamel Dean is going to be a concern, and that's kind of where the look came from the Dallas Cowboys. Give them a lot of credit. You know, a lot of coaches come in and say, what is the strength of the team? How do we defeat that strength? The Dallas Cowboys said, look, the strength of that team is that pass rush. How do we avoid the pass rush? Let's not try to defeat it. Let's just avoid it altogether. And they did it with a quick passing game, a lot of movement, a lot of crossing routes, a lot of misdirection, and it worked. You know what I mean? So I don't know if I'm worried, because I have a lot of confidence in this Buccaneers coaching staff to take a look. The Dallas Cowboys, what they did is they gave the Buccaneers a lot of film to self-scout with and self-evaluate, and they had 10 days to do it. So I have confidence in this defense and the coaches to make the necessary adjustments, and I don't think the Atlanta Falcons, if they try to copy what the Cowboys did exactly, are going to have as much success. But I am honestly still a little bit worried about Jamel Dean and that aggression. If I'm the Atlanta Falcons, I'm using some movement to try to see if I can get Calvin Ridley matched up against Jamel Dean and try to do some fancy things with some footwork and some manipulation of some stems to get Jamel Dean to bite on something early.
Well, I think, you know, your confidence, your optimism is benefited from seeing the Falcons offensive line struggle. You've seen this Bucs front dominate this previous Falcons offensive lines in previous years, with Shaq Barrett seemingly always having a field day against Caleb McGarry. The interior of the Falcons offensive line really struggling against guys like Javon Hargrave and Fletcher Cox, as well as even Hassan Ridgeway last week against Philadelphia. And oh, guess what? They get Ndamukong Suh and Vita Vea this week. So it doesn't get any easier for this Falcon offensive line. And so I think, you know, some of that confidence that you may have is, you know, the front can mask some of the issues that the Bucs may be dealing with in that secondary. You know, talking about trench play and really focusing more on the offensive side of the ball. And one of the concerns in that conversation that you and I had back earlier this summer was you were looking to see if this Bucs ground attack could, you know, get off to a better, more success this season than they did a year ago. I know that they weren't necessarily as balanced in that week one game against Dallas. It wasn't as if they were finding a lot of success on the ground. I know Ronald Jones was in the doghouse with another untimely fumble, but he's expected to get more action in this week two game. Do you see the Bucs, you know, trying to be more of that balanced team and running the football? Or do you see them going back to what has been tried and true for this team, particularly in recent matchups against the Falcons, where they can just sort of sling it all around the yard? And you see, we've seen big games from Mike Evans against this Falcons secondary, Antonio Brown as recently as last year, and of course, Chris Godwin in previous years. What do you sort of expect this Bucs offensive game plan to be?
Yeah, I don't think that Bruce Arians and his coaching staff are interested in, you know, in trying to rev up the running game so much. I think they're looking to win. You know what I mean? And that's, in a lot of ways, that's frustrating to Bucs fans, and especially fantasy, you know, players who maybe drafted Ronald Jones. But they don't care about your fantasy team. You know what I mean? And if they come out, I mean, you'll see some runs obviously early in the game. Ronald Jones is going to be starting. You know, Bruce Arians talked about that, and yeah, there was some grumbling among Bucs fans when Ronald Jones got pulled after that fumble and then never came back in. And Bruce talked about it, said he wasn't in the right mindset. Now, you always get a little bit concerned when you hear a coach publicly talking about the mindset and the mental stability of a player and maybe their willingness to compete. And they really didn't get any, you know, huge, you know, details about what that really meant. Maybe he was just mad at himself and they didn't want him going out there running mad or, you know, whatever it was. I don't think Rojo was necessarily sitting there saying, no, I'm not going back in type of thing. Or else he probably wouldn't be playing at all, you know. So the fact that they're starting him, you expect to see Ronald Jones come out and try to run and try to, you know, protect the ball a little bit better and try to be an effective part of the offense. But at the same time, I mean, you know, the Bucs aren't going to shoot themselves in the foot and punt the ball three drives in a row because they're trying to establish the run, quote unquote. If it comes out and they're not having the success that they want to have, they have no problem throwing the ball around the field and targeting, you know, their weapons, Chris Godwin, Mike Evans. A lot of Bucs fans would love to see Mike Evans maybe have a good game in this matchup. So, you know, if the Bucs running game gets going early if they can be a part of the passing game and not tip drill some interceptions in Atlanta Falcons' hands, then Bruce Arians, Byron Love, and Tom Brady would love to get the running backs involved, because the more the ball is in the hands of the running backs, the less it's in the hands of Tom Brady and the less chance there is of him getting injured. And that's always every game. I think that's priority number one, is win and then keep Tom Brady healthy for the next game. But if they have to throw it around the field, if they have to throw it 40 times, Tom Brady would love to go out there and put up 40 balls in the air, because that's what he's there to do. That's what he loves doing. And, you know, so I think they'll try early, but they're not going to overly commit to getting the running game going.
Now, going back to last year and talking about sort of the expectations going into this week, where, again, you have a Bucs team that's heavily favored against this Falcons team. I think, you know, the line for this week is basically two scores. A year ago, I believe the line was maybe a touchdown in that Week 15 matchup in Atlanta. But, you know, we saw that Falcon team sort of come out and punch this Bucs team in the mouth in that Week 15 matchup, and getting off to a 17-0 halftime lead. Obviously, the Bucs were able to sort of get their act together in the second half, and a lot of that was owed to a big third-quarter performance and several big plays from Mike Evans going up against Falcons then-rookie corner A.J. Terrell. But I'm curious, is there some concern, given that we've recently kind of seen a somewhat of a letdown with that Bucs team facing a Falcons team like that? Could this Falcon team, is there some concern for you that, you know, the Falcons could come out similarly and the Bucs could come out a little bit flat, be a little bit overconfident? What are sort of your expectations, I guess, for the mental fortitude of this current Bucs team?
Yeah, I think from an offensive standpoint, as long as you have Tom Brady on the team, I don't think he's going to allow anybody to really get, you know, cocky and all that stuff. And I mean, he himself he's having a little bit of fun on social media since he's joined the Buccaneers. And unfortunately, some of that's aimed at Matt Ryan and the Atlanta Falcons lately. But,
yeah,
you know, even in that, like, you even get the sense, it's not, you know, you've seen other quarterbacks come out and kind of be cocky publicly, and you kind of get the impression that it's kind of a lazy cockiness, right? But even with Tom Brady's cockiness, you can still see that determination. And when he gets on the field, you still see the look on his face, and it's all business as soon as, you know, the pads go on. And that's what he's going to make sure his offense is doing. And that's, we've heard, you know, player after player after player on that offense especially talk about the presence that Tom Brady has and how it locks everybody in. I mean, if you can wrangle in Antonio Brown and make him all business, I mean, that's quite a talent you've got there. And then and you have enough, honestly, coming out of week one. I mean, the entire team wants to show that, you know, to the doubters out there, that, you know, what they perceive as a weakness or as a setback or a Super Bowl hangover, whatever you call it, from week one was not in fact that. But then you also have Chris Godwin, who you know, fumbled the ball at the 2-yard line, had a redemption moment there late in the game on the game-winning drive where he got the ball into field goal range for Ryan Succop. But he wants to come out there and he wants to get over kind of the hands issues. He wants to kind of get over the turnover issues. And you know that next time he wants to convert that into a touchdown. Antonio Brown is still out there trying to prove the entire world wrong when everybody said, you know, and AB is done. He's probably never going to be successful in the NFL again. And then he's still out there trying to prove everybody wrong. And Mike Evans, he knows, you know, he says he's the best wide receiver in the NFL. So he knows the expectation of that is production. And even when other guys on the team are eating, he's happy, but he also wants to eat as well. And then, you know, Rob Gronkowski is always out there looking to have fun and end up in the end zone so he can do one of his patented celebrations, whether it's a spike or a robot. So offensively, I mean, there's just so many different assets on this roster to make sure that they're not going to get lax. And then on the defense, I mean, Carlton Davis couldn't stop tweeting last year about how underrated the secondary was. They just got gashed by Dallas Cowboys offense, and so some of those conversations are starting to come up, and a little bit of sarcasm, because I mean, they kind of adopted a nickname, the Gravediggers. It was like, okay, well, the Gravediggers, you know, you didn't dig a whole lot of graves against the Dallas Cowboys, so what's up with that? So they're going to be looking to come out and redeem themselves with Jamel Dean. Last time we saw Jamel Dean really get picked on this badly, as far as I remember, was the Seattle Seahawks 2 seasons ago. Actually, he came out a lot better, a lot more locked in, and a lot more of the talent showed up, a lot less of the deficiencies showed up. So I'm kind of expecting Jamel Dean to come out here looking to put on film that he is better than what they found in against the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, you know, sitting here from my perspective, as we saw in those two matchups a year ago, it just seemed like even though the Falcons could give the Bucs a pretty good punch, talking about that first half in that Week 15 game, coming back against the Bucs in that Week 17 game, certainly they are capable of you know, going blow for blow with this Bucks team for a chunk of a game. It just seems like the talent disparity has, you know, proven out that to be that, you know, this Falcons team just doesn't have enough to overcome this Bucks team. So I think for the Falcons looking here, you kind of need this Falcon team to play certainly above the level of play that they performed in week one and play some really good football in game two under Arthur Smith. And I think you need the Bucks to, shoot themselves in the foot a couple of times. You've touched upon some of the turnovers that they've been dealing with you know, fumbles and interceptions and whatnot. So I think that's really where the Falcons are going to have to try to attack them. I think that leads to a much more aggressive game plan for the Falcons. You know, it didn't quite work out for Wink Martindale in that Monday night game, the Ravens against the Raiders. But, you know, I do want to see some aggressive blitzes from Dean Pease to try and see if they can get the Bucs to make some mistakes there. I'm curious from your perspective, are you concerned about the turnovers? You have a 3-interception game from Tom Brady in that NFC Championship game. He had 2 picks in that week one game. You know, I don't think you can really blame him for those interceptions in regard, but you do have some fumble issues. Is there some concern that, you know, turnovers could wind up undermining maybe what the expectation is for this Bucs team heading into week 2?
I mean, you know, 3 of those 4 turnovers were really bad turnovers and should have never happened. You know, the other one, the Hail Mary at the end of the half, it's whatever, you know. If Jordan Lewis returns it for a touchdown, then it's not so much whatever. But as long as he gets tackled in the field of play, you're fine. And, you know, you're never going to really, you know, blame a guy for doing that. So, yeah, I mean, it's got to be a concern, you know, because you need to see those things get cleaned. That's how you kill yourself. That's how, you know, Bucks beat Bucks, and Bucks fans and the Buccaneers themselves have been familiar with that phrase over the years. And it wasn't just Jameis Winston. Like, I know he threw a lot of interceptions, but they also weren't all on him either. There were plenty of other players involved in some of those turnover problems. So you don't want to see those things continue to creep up. And, you know, week one, you can make all the excuses you want about, you know, first time playing that much, you know, in the action, the prime time atmosphere and all that stuff. But whatever the reasons or excuses that are being made for why it happened, it's got to get cleaned up. Because in my eyes, that game really kind of just showed, yes, how talented the Buccaneers offense is to still be able to put up 30 points, even though they had 4 turnovers. But it also shows how bad the Dallas Cowboys defense is. The Atlanta Falcons, as far as I'm concerned, they don't have a defense as poor as the Dallas Cowboys do. And Matt Ryan is still, you know, one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL, and they do have some weapons over there. And like you said, I don't expect the Atlanta Falcons to come out and only have 2 drives that cross the 50 for 2 weeks straight. I just don't think that's going to happen with this team. So that being said, if you turn the ball over 4 times, you might find yourself at the end of this game getting ready to lose this game, just like you did with the Dallas Cowboys. But you might find yourself down 2 scores instead of, you know, less than a field goal and stuff like that. So you cannot continue to give NFL teams, because, you know, this league is designed for everybody to go 500. We've talked about that. You can't continue to give people those opportunities. So, yeah, if they start turning the ball over early in this game, it could definitely spell a disaster for the Buccaneers in week 2. And after the week 1 close game against the Dallas Cowboys, a lot of people are going to start to remember a lot of those old Buccaneers feelings very quickly if that happens.
Well, from your lips to God's ears, David, in terms of Dan Quinn taking all the bad Falcons defensive mojo with him out of Atlanta to Dallas, I think Falcon fans, you know, on that note, we'll sort of leave it on that positive note where, you know, what someone praising the Falcons defense on a podcast, that's incredible. So we'll leave it there. David, certainly enjoy talking with you and seeing what this matchup is going to be. Obviously, we'll get another opportunity later this season to see what, you know, these two teams have for one another. But looking forward to Sunday's action, you know, maybe not be able to get a prediction from you, but in terms of that 12.5-point spread, are you feeling great about the Bucs' ability to cover that? Or do you feel like, you know, given it's a divisional matchup, you know, the Falcons should, you know, emphasis on should, be able to keep it a little bit closer than that?
Yeah, I think we're gonna see a very motivated Falcons team. I think we're gonna see you know, a coaching staff that's come in and kind of tweaked a lot of things and learned some things about their roster and their game plan and their execution. I think we're gonna see that from both sides to a certain extent. I do think that we see the Buccaneers score 30 points or more in a game for the 9th straight game, going back to last season through the postseason and all that. But I think we see a much better Falcons team, and I think we see a more competitive game than that spread would give you. So if you're betting with the spread, I would probably take the Falcons. I don't think we're looking at 12.5 points. I think we are looking at 10 points But again, so money line bet, take the Bucks against the spread. You know, I would probably go with the Falcons on that one.
Yeah, I'm of the same mind. But then again, I had the Falcons covering last week. So what do I know in that regard? So, David, again, I appreciate you joining me and talking about this week two matchup and looking forward to seeing what we see on Sunday. We're going to learn some things about this Falcon team. I feel like the Bucks at this point in time are proven, but it's just really about whether they can maintain that high degree of play that we've seen this team play, as you mentioned, over these last, you know, nine or so games where this offense has been firing on all cylinders. And of course, that defense has been firing on all cylinders. But we'll see if the Falcons can give them a challenge to at least throw a couple of wrinkles their way and challenge that sort of superiority that a lot of Bucks fans and people around the world seem to look at this team with.
Yeah, absolutely, Aaron. Always a pleasure to talk to you. And look, crossover two of the season done, crossover one between you and I finished. And of course, Falcons fans, Aaron's going to be back after the game for another episode this week, recapping what happens in this week two matchup. So make sure you come back and catch that. Bucks fans, James and I have another episode this week. Also, Aaron has another episode this week. And we will also be back after this game to recap everything with you. You know how to get a hold of us. If you think we're wrong about the outcome of this game, if you think the Falcons or the Bucks will cover the spread or have more than the spread, by all means, put that money where your mouth is. If you so choose, please gamble responsibly, of course. Or if you think we're completely wrong and the Falcons are going to come away with this win, by all means, go ahead and do that. But if you want some more information on whether or not you should put your money on either of these teams, you can probably find that over at our friends at the Locked On Bets podcast, hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling. Get your daily picks, blowout specials, wrong team favorite picks, and Lee Sterling's Lock of the Day. Follow the Locked On Bets podcast, brought to you by betonline.ag, wherever you get your podcast. That podcast, just like the Locked On Bucks, just like the Locked On Falcons podcast, free and available on all platforms. Guys, we'll be back with you on Friday for one more episode this week from the Locked On Falcons podcast, Locked On Bucks podcast. David Harrison and Aaron Freeman joining us here at Crossover Thursday on the Locked On Podcast Network.